It's wonderful to see so many people here this evening on our second night of our coming and going sesshin. Some of you, I think, are here for the first time. Some of you have returned after being away. Some of you are in residence at this retreat, which goes on for 3 weeks, and which is truly about coming and going. Every year when we have our coming and going sesshin, we pick a text to work with. And the text for this year is Shunryu Suzuki Roshi's book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. David gave a beautiful talk this morning about the prologue to this book, which outlines Suzuki Roshi's main theme, you might say, that it's important to encounter this life with freshness, to have the mind of a beginner rather than the mind of an expert. And we talked about how it's possible to know things and also to be in a state of not knowing at the same time. That it's possible for us human beings to learn about many, many things and also to wonder, to live in wonder, to live in a way that means that everything that we encounter is something that we have never quite encountered before. I first encountered this book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, at the very beginning of my Zen practice. Now, 35 years ago, it was a book that meant a lot to me, but I've read it now and then over the intervening years and less and less. And I really cherish the opportunity to dig deeply into it over these 3 weeks and to hear Dharma talks from many different people in Boundless Way Zen. Some of our guiding teachers, our Dharma holders, our senior Dharma teachers. And what I decided to do for myself was to read it again from the beginning and to try to put into practice what Suzuki Roshi was encouraging, to approach it as a beginner, which is kind of hard to do with a text like this, with a book like this that I've lived with for so long. But I decided to begin at the beginning, and so I read the foreword, which is by Houston Smith, who is an amazing scholar of religious tradition, who wrote about many different kinds of religions all over the world, including Buddhism, and practiced Buddhism among other religions that he also practiced. And a real appreciation on his part for Zen practice, which is what we're all engaged in here this evening. And in the introduction, Houston Smith recalls meeting Suzuki Roshi towards the end of his life, the end of Suzuki Roshi's life. He was someone who died what I used to think was in old age, but he was just a little bit older than me when he died, so I guess I don't think that anymore. He died in his 60s. He died of cancer, and he, in his short 12 years in this country where he'd come from Japan, founded the San Francisco Zen Center and a few other satellites of that place, which, as I said last night in our introduction, are still thriving. There are thousands of people who have studied Suzuki Roshi's brand of Zen, which is related to the brand of Zen that we practice and study in Boundless Way. Part of our tradition of the Soto school. And I want to read you what Suzuki Roshi said at the end of his life. I always find that last words are quite poignant. All of us are going to have them, believe it or not. We just read the five remembrances tonight, which are words that come out of the original Buddhist tradition. 2,600 years ago, when the Buddha walked the earth, he taught his disciples that everyone will get old, get sick, and die, that we will all be separated from our loved ones, and the only thing that we can count on is what we do. Last night we talked about this doing as a form of intentionality, making an intention. For these 3 weeks, we are intending to deepen our practice, to do all kinds of different things with our lives that maybe are a little bit unfamiliar, coming to sit and practice Zen meditation, doing it more than normal, living with the words of this great master of the 20th century, whatever it means for you. For me, it's this continual encounter with wonder, with freshness. So here's what Suzuki Roshi said to his students when he knew that he was dying. He said, "If when I die, the moment I'm dying, if I suffer, that is all right, you know. That is suffering, Buddha. No confusion in it. Maybe everyone will struggle because of the physical agony or spiritual agony too, but that is all right. That is not a problem. We should be very grateful to have a limited body like mine or like yours. If you had a limitless life, it would be a real problem for you." You just gotta love his directness. And Suzuki Roshi, like those of us in Boundless Way, are the inheritors of the great way of Dogen, Eihei Dogen, who lived in the 1200s and is one of the main teachers of our school. Dogen's teaching is sometimes a little bit hard to penetrate, and Suzuki Roshi's teachings are hard to penetrate in a similar way. One of the things I love about Dogen is that he will say one thing, and then in the very next sentence, he'll say something that seems to be contradicting what he just said. And then he'll say another thing that brings those things together. And then he'll say another thing that refutes both of those things. And the mind reading Dogen really gets all whipped up and then settles into the kind of straightforwardness that Suzuki Roshi is demonstrating here in his little quotation about his own death. He goes one direction, then he goes another direction, then he goes forward, then he goes back. Let's look into his words a little bit more deeply. He says, "If when I die, the moment I'm dying, if I suffer, that is all right, you know." Well, what an extraordinary thing to say. Not the way we usually think about suffering. Many of us are scared of dying, scared of getting sick, scared of suffering. Many of us have ill health already, and we don't like it when we get sicker. We don't like our bodies to fail us. It would be very hard for most of us in this room to make this statement, "If I suffer, it's all right." And what is suffering anyway? The teachings tell us that suffering is pervasive, that suffering is always arising in some form or other. It arises as a way of being out of alignment with the way things are. Suffering can be a little tiny thing, like an uncomfortable feeling about something, like it's a little bit cold, or, "Oh, I wish I wasn't so tired," or, when is this talk going to end so something really interesting will happen? It can be like that. Or it can be, as Suzuki Roshi says later in this quote, agony. The whole range of a little bit annoying to deeply, deeply agonizing. And this is our human life. And the Buddha taught that this truth of suffering is noble. It's not a problem. It's not something to be avoided. It's just the way things are. And it's possible to live a life where instead of protesting against things being out of alignment, we enter into the experience of being with things as they are, even when they're out of alignment. Suzuki Roshi goes on to say, that is suffering Buddha. This is one of the fundamental teachings of our boundless way, that everything that arises is some form of Buddha. And Buddha is just a word that means one who is awake. Awake to reality as it is, not the narrow, what we might call consensual reality that we're taught as children, and that just gets smaller and smaller and more confining as we get older and more mature and more knowledgeable about what it means to be human. Instead, through this great way of practice, what we understand of reality stops narrowing and gets bigger, more and more expansive, more and more embracing of every single thing that we encounter. And we see that there are no exceptions to this. Everything we touch, everything we hear, smell, see, feel, everything is Buddha. The things we like and the things we don't like, we are Buddha. This body that we are carrying around, that carries us around, or whatever that means, this is Buddha. This body with which we can find fault until the cows come home. This body is Buddha. This mind that creates so many problems for us, that doubts and speculates and turns around in circles and tries to figure everything out. This mind is Buddha. The rain falling is Buddha. The cushions are Buddha. The pain in our bodies, those of us who have been sitting for now 24 hours, this is Buddha. And so Suzuki Roshi speculates that when he gets closer to his own death and suffers, this will be suffering Buddha, a form of awakening in the form of physical and, as he says, maybe spiritual agony. And he says this, and this is a really important piece of this little text. No confusion in it. When we align with things as they are, including confusion, there's no problem. There's no confusion. There's just this. We don't have to figure everything out. Zen practice is not about figuring everything out. In fact, you might say it's the opposite of that, but if I do say that, maybe you'll misunderstand me. This Buddha nature, this awakened nature that fills the universe, and there's nothing but this everywhere, every time, every place. This is complete. There's no confusion in it. It's the simplest thing there is. Just this. Whatever your condition is right now, whatever your mind is doing, whatever your body is experiencing, just this. No confusion in it. Nothing to protest against, and if you find yourself protesting, the protesting is it too. There's no way out. There are no loopholes. No escape. Just this. He says maybe everyone will struggle because of the physical agony or spiritual agony too, but that is all right. That is not a problem. I hope you hear what a radical teaching he's giving us here. The worst things in the world, the things that we fear and avoid, not a problem. We make things into problems. We have such strong opinions about the way things should be. It's so easy to have the gap between this and that become so vast that it's the gap between heaven and earth, as Dogen says in one of his writings. Just the smallest distance is the gap between heaven and earth, he says. This is profound. Just this little bit of, nah, can be the source of endless suffering and agony. And to embrace the changes everything. Then no confusion, no problem. This means that things that are a problem are no problem. Imagine living like this. Imagine it. It's kind of incredible that I could be angry, afraid, sad, and it's no problem. And I could feel that it's a problem, and that too would not be a problem. So he goes on to say, we should be very grateful to have a limited body. I happen to be a fan of science fiction, and I love it in every form it takes, books and movies and television series. And sometimes there are stories about people who live forever. And if you go back in time to ancient Greek and Roman mythology, you find similar stories about people who live forever, and they are miserable. Without something that ends the endlessness, it's quite a problem. To have the finality ahead of us seems like a problem. But to know that things are going to end can be a great relief. All stories begin and end. All lives begin and end. Civilizations begin and end. Zen communities begin and end. We are right now in the middle of a great upheaval in our own country. We don't know what's going to happen. All over the world, terrible violence, terrible suffering. And if we look back in history, the only difference is that we have better weapons than we used to have. Terrible destruction, agony, suffering. And can we look at this with the eyes of Suzuki Roshi? No confusion. It's all right. This is the way it is. Everything ends. And he ends his little passage to his students, telling them about his own death, by saying, if you had a limitless life, it would be a real problem for you. And the funny thing is, we actually do have a limitless life. Later on in the book, he talks more about that, and probably later on in this retreat, we will too. And what he means by limitless lives completely inside the truth of mortality. Right now, in this moment, everything is happening. Everything is being experienced. The past, the future, this moment contains everything. That's the kind of limitlessness that Zen teaches. And it also teaches that everything that begins ends. That there will be a time when we breathe out and we won't breathe in again. So the teaching is right here, just this. Nothing but this, limitless and only this moment. If when I die, the moment I'm dying, if I suffer, that is all right, you know. That is suffering, Buddha. No confusion in it. Maybe everyone will struggle because of the physical agony or spiritual agony too, but that is all right. That is not a problem. We should be very grateful to have a limited body, like mine or like yours. If you had a limitless life, it would be a real problem for you. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we're going to have what we call a Dharma dialogue now. And this is where you can ask a question or make a comment about the talk or about your practice. And we'll do our best to respond to you.
Difficult to talk about death. I'm a nurse. I'm kind of surrounded by it. But, you know, when you said that, I haven't read this book, you know, the suffering, it's okay. I almost have a physical reaction to it. Because I know it's there, and as a nurse, I do everything within my powers to, you know, to alleviate suffering. And sometimes you can't. You know, you do the best you can, but you can't. And in watching people, I have seen people die for many, many years. And when you said, like, they're Buddha, it's like they are teaching me, and I am teaching others. And I thought that was very profound in that I never thought of that as, like, that is something for me to learn, you know, and I'm still processing. It's still, I gotta wrestle with that for a bit. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think what you say is so important in these different aspects. So Suzuki is not saying that if someone's suffering, we should go over and tell them it's okay.
I didn't take it that way.
Right.
But and
so to do what we can, it's also okay. So some of us, when we see someone who's in uncomfortable, we freak out. Oh my God, what am I going to do?
Right.
But I think as a nurse or someone around, okay, this person's in discomfort. What do we do? Mm-hmm. We have some options. We do what we can. And we don't have to panic about it. It's like, oh, this is what happens to human bodies.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then these realizing that everyone we encounter is the Buddha.
Right.
Teaching us. Someone at the end of life gives us the great gift of allowing us to be there. So Buddha after Buddha comes to us.
Yes.
Yeah. And in all these different forms, you know, as a nurse, you know that the sort of, there's a myth in American culture now of a beautiful death. You know that it's not like that. You know, people yell and scream and throw their shit around and do all kinds of things, right? So to see all that as Buddha, that's what I hear you really...
Yes, heard. Yes. And it just... you know, I also took care of my father when he was dying, and I was actually thinking, got a little misty, but I was thinking, like, he was Buddha.
Yeah.
And he was teaching me.
Yeah.
And I was so honored to be there, to just be there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
It's very profound.
Thank you.
So someone else to come forward with what's alive for you in this moment. It's one of the ways we serve the Sangha by coming. coming forward with what's clear, what's not clear. What's here? Yes, Susan.
I would say something just sort of building on what you said. I've already grown old. It's not a myth. but at, you know, my viewpoint on life now is different. I mean, I still look forward, I still look around, but there's a lot more behind. And I realize how much time and energy I and all of us spend trying to get away from things that we think are going to be bad. And sometimes they really are bad. I mean, there are lots of terrible things. But what I have found so remarkable in this practice, and I was not able to get the same teaching, I was not able to understand it, at least, from another source, was there are things that you can learn to do about yourself and about others that say, okay, it is going to be bad. It's not what you want. You're going to have to live with it anyway. But you can learn to do that. You're not in it with no help. Mm-hmm. And you can grow, and you have other witnesses like the Buddha saying, look, you know, you can do this. And if we all think, I mean, I'm sure everyone in this room has done at least one thing that they thought they just couldn't do and was just going to be too bad. But it really changes the outlook if you think, look, here's this body of experience of serious people who are saying, you know, if you can just sit there, hold in there, and take it, it's not going to be any worse than what you've been running from, that you've magnified in your mind. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm very grateful for that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Susan.
And I think it is that turning towards what's here. Mm-hmm. At some point, all of us tonight have decided we are going to come and sit here, whatever arises in the mind, in our experience, and we're really practicing this possibility of turning toward and meeting. And I love what you say, that we're encouraged by these teachings not to believe them, but to try for ourselves. So it doesn't seem possible, but I'll try it and see, since running is not working very well. Right? We sort of run out of steam, then we turn. And the teaching is that it is not what you think it is. And you are not alone.
Thank you.
Well, with that, let's take a few more breaths and we'll go on to walking meditation.